Our prelude is Song Without Words by Mendelssohn, and it's performed by Mary France. She's going to be 99 in 2 weeks. And while you applaud now, please don't applaud for the music today. That's the request of Mary. It's very serious music. She wants you just to enjoy it and to meditate on it. Good morning, and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name's Mary Mullen, and my pronouns are she and her. Over my 42 years at Prairie here, I've taken many different roles, including program chair and president, and currently I'm the archives chair. I sing in the choir, and I sometimes serve as a Zoom tech. Prairie aspires to be an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We strive to be welcoming to all, though we recognize that we all have biases that limit our understanding of how others perceive us and how we may perceive others. We stumble in our efforts, but we commit to keep trying to grow in our ability to love people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender identity, family structure, age, or abilities. We have a few announcements. See the paper or emailed order of service for additional events. And Rachel Long wanted to me to announce that her great-niece, Hanine, colored the eggs. And you can't see them now, but when the doors open there to the kitchen, you'll be able to see them. They're beautiful. And if you didn't make your own, feel free to take some. Be sure to register now for our annual retreat, April 29th to May 1st, 2022 at Bethel Horizons in Dodgeville. Online registration is preferred, and there are also some paper registration forms on the back hymnal cart. How many of you remember our last retreat out there? I do. It's been a while. Rachel Long and Martin Arnold will like to share some fun memories of past retreats to help you jog your memory and let newcomers know what they'll be getting into.
So I'll start by channeling Martin, who is in the back doing tech, which is where he prefers to be. This is what he said to me in the car. I speak for the introverts. Prairie Retreat is a wonderful place to build community, but it's also a retreat. So feel free to retreat to the woods, to the trails, to a comfy chair to read a book. And then maybe you can venture out a little bit and talk with others and participate in the great programs. What I would say for myself is the retreat is usually a highlight of my year. With the world of COVID, I have to say my world of every 3 or 4 years, it seems, since it's been so long since we had one of our retreats, and I so look forward this year. It's a chance when we can just chill and talk with each other and actually get to know each other and really feel like a community. But it's also a time to participate in programs that can be just fun, like arts, crafts, singing, discussion, and it's just a wonderful time. So I hope...
The food is very good.
And the food is very good, says Mary. And there's always coffee for those who need it. So I hope that some of you who haven't been to a retreat before, do feel free to come, because when we first joined, we took a few years, like, ooh, that seemed like such a big thing to go for like a whole day or day and a half. And once we started going, we realized, oh, this is great. So I hope you all come.
I agree that it's the highlight of the year. Just to mention a couple of the announcements that are on the order of service, the kids are all out having an Easter egg hunt. That's why they aren't in here, and why a lot of the adults aren't in here either, because they're helping. We raised $9,509 in the service auction. Yay! Thanks to our auctioneer, Orange, who's sitting right back there, and all of you who bid. And there's a spiritual exploration group that meets every 2 weeks. The next meeting is Thursday, April 21st at 1 p.m. Is that in person? It's on Zoom. And the parish meeting is coming up on May 22nd. Our opening music is on page 61 of the hardcover book, this one. And Lo, the Earth Awakes Again. It should be on the seat in front of you or under the seat in front of you or in the back. They're all out there. Okay, please feel free to stand if you like to.
Ring with leaf and flower and spray.
Our chalice lighting will be read by Margaret Moses.
Good morning. For Holy Days on Which We Recall the Old Stories by Dilman Baker Sorrells. For Holy Days on Which We Recall the Old Stories, we light the flame. For Passover, which reminds us of the courage and strength of those seeking freedom in the past, we light the flame. For Easter, which reminds us that love is our greatest challenge, we light the flame. For gathering today in this sacred space, we light the flame. For the opportunity to be together as a community, to remember the past, to plan for the future, to be alive in our present.
Thank you, Margaret. We will now have a moment of silent meditation. Our reading will be done by Jean Kane.
Seasons of the Self. We need a celebration that speaks the spring-inspired word about life and death, about us, and we live and die. Through all the cycling seasons, days and years, we need the sense of deity to crack our own hard, brown December husks and push life out of inner tombs and outer pain. Unless we move the seasons of the self, the spring can't come for us. The winter will go on, and Easter will remain a myth, and life will never come again, despite the fact of spring.
Thanks, Jean. Our presentation today is by Reverend Matt Aspen, Readying to Rise. Reverend Matt's our full-time minister, our contract minister for this church year. His presentation today is entitled Readying to Rise, as I mentioned, and relates to our fourth UU principle, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Reverend Matt.
Greetings, dear ones. It is so very good to be here with you on this day. This day where literally billions of people of faith are celebrating a rare confluence of holy days for Muslims and Jews and Christians alike, all honoring reflection, renewal, and salvation. As I thought about the message I would bring to you here today, on this Easter Sunday, I saw an overlap between the 40 days of separation symbolized by Lent and the resurrection of Jesus back to life, as we all begin the slow process of bringing ourselves back to life in a world that has been changed over the past 2 years in ways that we are still a long way from understanding. As Unitarian Universalists, whether we believe the stories passed down from our ancestors literally, or simply as examples of survival lessons that can help to inform our decisions as we face our current challenges, our living tradition encourages us to examine wisdom from the world's religions to help inspire our ethical and spiritual lives. This particular Easter Sunday also overlaps with both Passover and Ramadan, an occurrence made rare because these traditions are grounded in different calendars that are connected to the moon cycle as opposed to the sun. But since all are occurring right now, and since there is no shortage in the world today of a need for wisdom that can help guide our way forward, I've turned to these traditions to help inform my message to you today as well. And since the world feels especially topsy-turvy right now, in this moment of history, I'm even planning to throw in some lessons from our pagan and native siblings. We are living in confusing times. I think we can use all the help we can get as we try to consider what do we do next. Let's begin with the pandemic itself. This invisible and often deadly contagion began sweeping across the globe. It was 2 years ago at this point. Those of us who put a lot of belief in science began to receive a steady dose of information, sometimes frightening, sometimes conflicting, often confusing, all aimed at helping to guide us regarding what behaviors we might consider adopting to keep us as safe as possible. Our schools sent our children home, perhaps keeping us safer, but leading to a rash of unintended consequences. Workers in white-collar jobs discovered that their tasks actually could be done almost entirely remotely. Blue-collar workers whose labors required in-person activity were forced to risk their own health and the health of their families to ensure basic services continued for the rest of us unabated. And healthcare workers. Healthcare workers have been forced to bear the brunt of this challenge, both taking on the risks and watching the pain of unprecedented loss within a system that was stretched beyond its breaking point over and over again. The elderly amongst us were isolated more than ever, to the point where loneliness and separation significantly amplified existing health challenges. No one was exempt from the turmoil that this pandemic has wrought. And now, in this moment, in this spring, we are collectively beginning to emerge from this forced separation. But it's not a singular event. There's no stone being rolled back and no miraculous explanation being offered. Instead, we are looking at less deadly variants, lowered case counts, mixed in with waves of upticks and downticks that make us keep wondering whether it is truly safe or not to dive back into life. Each of us experienced this pandemic differently. But if there is one thing that tends to be common amongst folks whose lives have been upended, it is a longing for a return to the way things used to be. Except, of course, the reality is that the world has continued to change while the pandemic raged. And if we are paying attention, we are reminded almost daily that the way things used to be perhaps wasn't all that healthy either. There is so much fear and uncertainty in the world that authoritarianism is on the rise globally as folks grasp for any message that promises them safety and security. We saw the stoked fears and deep frustrations of many of our fellow citizens combust into a nearly successful takeover of our democracy on January 6th last year. We are seeing cracks in the gospel of neoliberalism as a path to helping all ships rise in the tide, as we see instead unfathomable levels of wealth being amassed by a tiny collection of people. Simultaneously, the abundance of our planet is being mindlessly depleted, and none of us are exempt from feeling what it's like to go without, due to what today are labeled supply chain disruptions. But tomorrow will likely be actual lack of supplies due to overconsumption. So as we come back together, as we welcome this new spring, this new rebirth, it is clear that some things need to change. But change is the one thing that we humans are most wired to avoid, even when it has become clear that things must change. It is hard to resist the promises of past comforts, especially when the thing we crave most of all is nothing more than just that, comfort from the storms of life. So, as we are drawn together to celebrate this ancient tale of a miraculous return to life after death, a death which included an atonement for all of our sins, the question I pose to you today is this. Are we, as Unitarian Universalists, also ready to rise up from the trauma and death of COVID-19 and bring the much-needed light to the continued suffering of the world that our faith tradition demands? There are three categories of useful lessons culled from our ancestors that I will offer today for your consideration on that path. Each of these is designed to help strengthen our spirits, clear our minds, and set us up to approach the world with more humility and greater equanimity. The first is sacrifice. The second is grief. And the third, thankfully, for a little lightheartedness, is celebration. Since I've equated our collective pandemic isolation to the Easter tradition of Lent, I'm going to spend most of my time here. Many traditions utilize fasting for a variety of spiritual purposes. Christians celebrate Lent as a way of honoring the 40 days and nights Jesus spent in the desert, preparing his soul for the challenges he knew he was about to face. In medieval times, the Catholic practice of Lent was enforced as civil law. During this time, no food sourced from a land animal was permitted. These foods were not banned because they were bad. Rather, it was done to create a greater appreciation of these foods, so that when you were able to partake in them again, you would be properly thankful for their presence in your life. Lent is ultimately a spiritual practice designed to promote gratitude. We are also in the middle of Ramadan this year, which serves as a reminder to Muslims of the month when the Quran was first revealed to the Prophet Muhammad. As one of the five pillars of Islam, the act of fasting is meant to remind Muslims of the less fortunate and to reinforce the need to be thankful. So, the roots of these two traditions, which began at different times and for different reasons, both had the same intention: to increase gratitude for the abundance that we do have. For many of us, the forced isolation of pandemic has led to a greater appreciation of the relationships that we have been cut off from. Remember what it was like to come back. It was so good to see people in person, to be able to look at people. For some, it has led to a profound awareness of just how fast we had been running, trying to keep up. We were forced to come back and slow down a little bit. For others, it has created a deeper connection within families. In others still, an awareness of just how critical our support systems outside of family can sometimes be. This is the exact opposite of what capitalism suggests. Capitalism creates a scarcity mindset, a race for faster and cheaper and more, and a false sense that comfort can always be acquired for a price and with little regard for consequence. Since many have cast these ancient lessons aside or watered them down so much that there's no way for their lessons to take hold, it's little wonder that we face endemic levels of loneliness and addiction in this country. We rarely make intentional sacrifices to help us reset our longings. Perhaps it is time to reconsider the reasons for the seasons and explore the old roads that are becoming less and less traveled. They served our ancestors well for thousands of years. And even if we don't believe all of the stories connected to their telling, there are certainly lessons we might benefit from if we are willing to re-examine these practices with honor and humility. I can tell you that for the first time in my adult life, this born Catholic, lived atheist, who then became a semi-spiritual UU, decided to give up something for Lent this year. What I found was that this 40-day intention helped me to completely reset my relationship with a habit that I had been struggling with for a very long time to change. 40 days seemed like a manageable timeline, and I can report that this exercise did have the desired effect. Intentional abstinence from a habit created the space I needed to examine the sources of the habit with a clearer lens. And I must admit that an unexpected outcome has been a deeper sense of gratitude for the life I have and a stronger commitment to make even more intentional choices going forward. While preparing for this section, I also studied current pagan thoughts related to fasting. One good suggestion I found was the idea of consciously reconnecting to the natural world by intentionally foregoing foods that are out of season in the places we inhabit. Capitalism now makes it easy to access whatever foods we want, whenever we want them, but this comes with great hidden costs that it's really easy for us to ignore if we're not paying attention. Exploited labor, leached soil, polluted rivers, and fossil fuel consumption for transportation are the unsustainable price we pay for the pleasure of enjoying a peach in February. As we work to strengthen ourselves, to create a world that is no longer based upon unlimited consumption, perhaps we might be well served to either recommit to or consider anew acts of intentional limiting that might lead us to better individual and collective outcomes. The second thing our modern society might do well to consider ancient lessons on is the concept of grief. I know we talked about this a few weeks back, but I think it's fitting here. So much has been lost over these past 2 years. To say nothing of missed visits and holidays and graduations and vacations and celebrations, almost 1 million deaths have been attributed to this disease in this country. It is quite likely that everyone gathered here today has either lost a loved one or knows someone that has. Those of us engaged in paying jobs are typically allowed 3 days to grieve the loss of close relatives, and none to grieve the loss of close friends. Normalizing this timeline creates the false impression that we should be able to just move on quickly from losses and get back to it. But that's not how we humans work. The people and relationships in our lives combine to help us understand who we are. I am a son, and a father, and a sibling, and a friend, and a minister. Not because I am those things in isolation, but because of the relationships that makes those things so. And even though I know that each of those relationships is finite, if any of them are taken from me unexpectedly, it will have a profound impact on the very definition of who I think I am. The same thing can be said of missed rituals. I spent my 50th birthday isolated alone in an apartment at the very beginning of the pandemic. My graduation from seminary was canceled. My ordination was done virtually. It is also likely that many gathered here today missed out on so many important events and connections over the last 2 years. And even though I know these events happened, there's a part of me that still remains unsettled by it. We attach rituals to these life events for a reason. And when they are missed, the loss is actually tangible. While we are encouraged in this society to just grin and bear it, a healthier approach would be to make intentional space to actually grieve our losses. If you haven't already done so, I would encourage you to be open to the possibility of honoring the grief that you rightly feel for the losses that you have endured. Jumping right back into life without taking time and steps to intentionally heal our wounds leaves us weaker and less resilient as we are called upon to face whatever challenges life decides to throw at us next. The final ancient practice I would like to hold up, as we reconvene again in our collective efforts to share our light in the sometimes darkened world, is celebration. We sometimes relegate joyful celebrations to the children. I looked out the window, they were having a ball out there, running around and looking for stuff and collecting things. No doubt many of the children in this community will be hunting for Easter eggs, gathering small treasures, and enjoying chocolates this weekend. But celebration serves an important role in our adult lives as well. Christians over the world are celebrating the miracle of Jesus rising from the dead. Muslims will end their Ramadan fast with a joyous celebrations of Eid al-Fitr. Our Jewish friends celebrating Passover are recounting the story of Exodus when their ancestors emerged from slavery. Pagans have always celebrated the return of spring and the first people of this land do the same. When you attach celebration to the shared achievement of something difficult, be it surviving winter or the remodeling of a building, it can serve to refill our collective souls. Life can be hard, but it is also so beautiful. And failing to engage in joyful celebration can cause us to forget about that and just simply lead to nihilism. So, as we come back together, in these challenging times of war and climate change and ever-growing uncertainty, after grieving what has been lost, I would encourage you to revel in joyful celebration for all that remains. You are here, and I am here, and you are here, and you are here, and you are here, and we are all here together. And that is a miracle worth celebrating. Look each other in the eye and offer a smile. Hug old friends. Sing a song if you can, and be willing to dance like nobody is watching. Because if we are to have any chance to change the ills of this world, we need to be strong. We would be well served to re-examine the spiritual disciplines like fasting that are designed to help us better appreciate the riches that we do have. We would be wise to actually acknowledge the grief that we are holding and to do the work to repair the holes in our heart before we go running back into the breach. And as our wise ancestors always try to remind us on days like Easter, joyful celebration when the dark days have passed helps us to remember that spring has once again arrived and hope will once again bloom anew. This world that we live in is what we make it. As we begin to emerge from the tomb of forced social isolation, let us commit to honor the life-giving practices that sustained our ancestors through times just as hard as we are facing today. Let us take the lessons they have shared with us, converting them to our present sensibilities if needed, and use the gifts they have to offer as we prepare to add our contributions to this next chapter in human history. Eid Mubarak, Chag Pesach Sameach, and Happy Easter to you all.
Thank you, Reverend Matt. Now is the time that our community dedicates to discussion around the focus of today's service, and we rely on our covenant of good relations as a guide to ensure that all our voices are heard and welcomed and our relationships are valued. If you're in the room and feel comfortable when you want to speak, please come up here to the podium so that those who are on Zoom can see who's speaking and can hear it better. Also, please introduce yourself with your name and pronouns. That's welcomed. You don't have to, but if you would like to, please do. And if a lot of people want to speak, feel free to stand in a line on either aisle so that you can get up to the podium a little bit faster. If you prefer not to come to the podium when you speak, just raise your hand and one of our helpers will bring a microphone to you. And if you are online, please type your question or comment into the chat and the Zoom helper will read the question or comment aloud for you. That was a lot of instructions. I had a thought, just in case no one had anything to say, is... to ask how many of you have ever done a fast. Let's just have a show of hands. It might be interesting to find out, you know, how that went and what it made you appreciate or whatever. So, who'd like to speak?
Hi, my name's Randy Converse, he, him. I had a thought around the importance of sacrifice as giving us a psychological meaning or a political meaning. It also has a health benefit. I don't know if you've read periodic fasting can be very helpful for us. So I'm thinking, well, fasting has two benefits that we don't really know about. And maybe the ancients kind of realized that periodic fasting had a dual effect, a dual positive effect on us.
Just stay up here, Mary.
Just stay up here, go. Well, I really appreciated Matt's thoughts, and I thought of, although my family was never particularly Christian or religious in any sense, we always had fun at Easter and enjoyed the celebration of spring. One year, my brothers and I decided to make a treasure hunt for our parents. And so we gathered up all our money and put it in a coffee can and buried it in the garden. And then they had these clues to follow. And they finally got to the garden and realized this is where they had to dig. And they dug, and they dug, and they dug. We were pretty good diggers. And then they came to a big lump of concrete. My brother had decided to make this really a good tomb, and so he poured a whole bag of cement in and some water. My father finally got the can out and opened it, and he got 57 cents. And I guess he had stories for the next few weeks at his place of work, how hard he worked for 57 cents. But it was appreciation, and it was joy.
It was a week ago that I was still in Mexico and in a little town called Loreto. We attended the Catholic Church that morning because there was no other church in this town. A huge church, a beautiful mission, which was the first one that was built on the Baja. There in front of me stood a tall woman, young woman, probably at least 7'6". I have no idea. She was not only tall, but she was gorgeous. She stood there in her countenance, just enwrapped in the service. Another woman stood there, and this brought tears to my eyes. She was very short. She was probably 4'2", 4'3", I have no idea. She was Aztec, and she carried a babe in her arms. She stood there rocking this child the entire service because there was no room for us to be seated. This was a very special thing for me. It was a Catholic service. I am not Catholic. I was Presbyterian most of my life, but now I claim to be Unitarian. But it was special because I realized that our faith will carry us no matter where we are or who we are. And my faith was there in that spot that morning on Palm Sunday in Loreto, Mexico.
I'm Rick Recking, he. I told Rachel and Martin that I always have something to say. But yesterday, this morning I was thinking, I'm having a hard time facing the new change with the opening up from the pandemic and being around people. Yesterday I was at the dog park and an older woman approached me kind of very intrusively. She got very close to me, but I went back and she was surprised and shocked that anyone would feel rejection like that. And I was shocked too as I walked away because that's not how I felt about her, but it was like that's what I've taken in the last 2 years. Sitting here today, I was reminded of a great failing of mine from 50 years ago. Late at night, I was in a gas station under bright, bright lights on a long trip, probably tired, and I turned to say something to the guy at the other pump, and he turned around, and his face had been burned off in a fire, and to my shame, I cried out, and I thought about that man for all these years. I hope he did well.
Hi, I'm Katrina. My pronouns are they, them. I'm fasting today for Ramadan. And I really appreciated you bringing in Ramadan, because when I saw the description of the service, I was like, oh, it's just Christianity again. and I feel like even though we're sort of, our principles are to include all world religions, often that's just Christianity and paganism, and everything else kind of is a bit marginalized. Today's the 16th day of fasting, and I've tried to fast many times. I've been Muslim for more than 10 years. I can't remember now. And this is the most days I've ever actually successfully done it, and that's because I've modified it very much from what is traditionally expected. The rest of my family is not Muslim, so I decided not to wait all the way till sundown, because then I wouldn't get to eat any meals with them. So I stop at dinner time and eat with them. And I discovered that the traditional time that like a Muslim website will list as dawn is actually almost an hour before what Google says is dawn. So I'm using Google and sleeping an extra 45 minutes. And I thought it was interesting that you said the purpose of Ramadan is to instill gratitude, or of fasting during Ramadan, because I feel like that's actually something that Muslims have overlaid on it later as a kind of justification of it. And if you look at how it's talked about in the Quran, it's really just, this is mandated. You're doing it because God says you have to. And I think for me, that's partly why I wasn't successful in the past, because I don't believe that we are mandated to do various things or that we'll be punished if we don't do them. And so for this year, I've kind of reinterpreted it from a more Buddhist perspective, which is looking at it as a way of practicing restraint so that theoretically it can then lead into restraint in other aspects of one's life, like not getting angry as easily or things like that. So for me, that has been a useful kind of reframing. I think that's all I wanted to say. There might have been one other thing that I forgot. But anyway, thank you for bringing Ramadan in.
Were there any Zoom comments on Zoom? Okay. I guess I'd like to share that one time when I was fasting, which is about the only time I've ever really done it purposely, I went to see my parents, and my mother, I didn't realize how much she depended on providing food for us to show her hospitality. And when we refused the food, she felt like she felt at a loss, I guess, for how she could show her gratitude for our coming to see her. So that was an unexpected result of that. I don't know if she ever fasted. Probably she never did, so she didn't understand that. But that's just another, you know, aspect of it, is how much we depend on providing food. Some people, at least, providing food shows their relationship to you. Okay, thank you all for sharing and for listening. We're now going to be sharing our offering, and this quarter goes to the Catalyst Project. It's a small community of up to 3 single moms and their young kids who have experienced homelessness. Catalyst offers collaborative problem-solving, trauma-informed mentoring, and client-specific therapeutic intervention. The Catalyst Project was founded on the belief that the wisdom of those grossly mistreated by our society and its discriminatory systems is essential to creating a society that serves all of its people. The offertory, which will be performed by Mary France, is called Prelude by Pachelbel. And remember, don't applaud.
Just a correction. This is from a book of preludes that includes some by Pachelbel. Oh. This one happens to be by J.G. Walther, who lived from 1684 to 1748. The whole book is of settings of chorale preludes. Thank you.
Our closing words will be read by Reverend Matt.
If you'll grant me just a couple of moments, I'd like to respond to a couple of things that I heard and saw today. First of all, Katrina, your reminder that a lot of the things that we take as we read or we take as whatever aren't the original words, but I think that's kind of what we do. We take events and we go through history and things emerge and stories come along. And one of the stories that I found, or one of the things that I found about the fasting, a rule again, which was certainly put in by humans, was the idea if you break the fast, if you don't do it in the way that it's supposed to be done, there is supposed to be an act of giving to somebody in need, as sort of a penance for missing that day of fasting. Again, not a bad. I think that's a really good way to do it. If you set intention for yourself and you don't live up to your own expectation, give to somebody else as a reminder of what you're trying to do. When Rick spoke, I was reminded that growing up Catholic, once we went through confirmation, we would go to confession. And I don't think Unitarian Universalists really have a confession. We don't have a place where if we're holding something that we're feeling guilty about, that we have to be able to set it down. And when we don't have a place to set it down, we carry it around with ourselves for 50 years. And that takes away from us, even if it's just a little bit, all of those little things that we wish we had done differently in the moment. If there's nowhere to put them down, we carry them with us. And so maybe this coming up in front of people, I know we're doing the log jam ceremony at this summer to as a place to do some of those things. And then finally, on a little bit of a lighthearted note, Millie, I wonder if you think I'm 7'6". Our closing reading today is number 692 in the back of your hymnals. It's by Laura Lynn Bellamy. If here you have found freedom, take it with you into the world. If you have found comfort, go and share it with others. If you have dreamed dreams, help one another that they may come true. And if you have known love, give some back to a bruised and hurting world. Go in peace.
Our closing music is on page number 38 in the gray hymnal, Morning Has Broken. That's a good thing, morning has broken. Well, at this time, we're stopping the recording. As a caring community, we now take time to briefly share.